Blog Talk Radio.
January 6th, 2011. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Buck Runyon, and tonight we're going to discuss the concept, the history, and the current application of the attainment of knowledge and conversation of the Holy Guardian Angel, the HGA operation. This is actually a worldwide practice and an essential stage in the development of any shaman or magician. Now, all serious magical students should make contact with their own guardian spirit. Now, in the Western tradition, this is typified by the medieval Book of Abramelin, in which a Kabbalistic magician gives his son detailed instructions on how to conduct a year-long or longer devotional retreat in order to acquire the blessings, the wisdom, and the power from his holy guardian angel so that he can become the master of all spirits, good and evil. Now, this book had a profound influence on Samuel Mathers of the Golden Dawn, on Aleister Crowley, and on Franz Barden. Now, Cagliostro, back in the 18th century, even had a 41-day version of this retreat in his Egyptian Masonry. In the OTA, we require a 3-day version of the retreat, as it was developed in Charles Russell's GBG system. That is the Gnostic Brotherhood of God, which Lou Kelling called the Great Brotherhood of God. That was Charlie Russell's. His own polemic organization, he was a follower of Crowley, but he also was very creative in his own right. And that organization flourished in the Southern California area back in the 1930s. Now, we in the OTA have the anchorite do 22 rituals, one for each path on the Tree of Life, during his or her stay in the temple. A record is kept, and a juice fast is maintained. Now, as far as we know, we are the only magical system in the West that has such a requirement at the present time. Now, we place this retreat in our third degree as a prerequisite to advancement into the inner degrees of the Kratarapola system. If done correctly, this retreat can be one of the most profound spiritual experiences of a lifetime. Now, tonight I'll share with you some of my retreat experiences and visionary knowings. I will also suggest the do's and the do-nots for those of you who might want to try this on your own, but I caution you that this is an intense and a demanding procedure which requires health, strength, maturity, and self-discipline to properly accomplish. Now, it should be supervised. So, let's turn on, tune in, and climb the holy mountain together. Now, let me point out a few things first about this this process that I think we need to lay the groundwork on to start with. We have lost sight since the rise of the Faustian school in the 1700s and the 1800s. We've lost sight in many ways of the essential principle of high magic that flowered during the Renaissance period, where these Renaissance magicians, these Hermetic magicians, Pacino, Pico della Mirandola, Campanella, and these magicians, Giordano Bruno, these magicians may actually have been almost pagan in many ways. They were Hermetic, but they didn't. They weren't anti-Jesus. They weren't anti-Jehovah. They considered themselves to be in their own way. Many of them considered themselves to be good Christians. They believed that they could. They were essentially good, and they would invoke and assume the role of a pious, God-fearing individual who would then use the power of God and the blessings of God to control the rebellious fallen angels and the spirit, the rebellious spirits, what some people would refer to as demons. And they saw nothing whatsoever immoral or evil about this. In the High Renaissance, this was the way it was done. In fact, this was the way it was done in ancient Egypt. And the idea was you got the gods on your side, and then the gods helped you control the spirits of nature and the so-called demons. This was the way magic was done all the way through the Gnostic period, through Alexandria, through the Sabaeans, and all the way through magic, all the way up into the Renaissance. This is the way it was done. There wasn't any selling your soul to the devil or any of this business of wallowing around in evil. That didn't come about until the degeneration of magic during the Faustian period in the 1700s. And the reason I'll explain how that came about. Hermes Trismegistus, who was the grand old godfather of our system, and whoever Hermes Trismegistus was, now some people think that he was really originally Akhenaten, and maybe that's true, you know, because certainly there's the Akhenaten Aton sun worship system in ancient Egypt seems to be in a presage of Hermetic philosophy in many ways. So, but Hermes, we really think of him as flourishing in Alexandria around the time of Hypatia, around the time of Christ. This is where Hermetic philosophy really is going. Well, it was actually Hermetic philosophy is devout. I mean, God is worshipped. God is revered. God is a good positive force, a force of regulatory love. And remember now that Empedocles, and this is going back to our original system, Empedocles was one of the founders, even before Hermes Trismegistus, but of course a little after Akhenaten, but Empedocles, a Sicilian Greek, he said, and we've all extrapolated from him, that everything in the universe is air, earth, fire, water, love, and strife. That's it. That's the whole thing. So you have to, if you want to be prosperous, if you want to have power, if you want to really be a powerful magician, and then you have to use the power of love to control the effect of strife. Well, okay, I mean, this is putting it about as simply as you possibly can, and yet, for some reason or other, we managed to get away from that in the 1700s, and then we started wallowing around in this, well, they're going to sell my soul to the devil so he can give me all it. Well, this was a result. It started in 1614 with a philologist, a language expert, by the name of Casaubon, not the same Casaubon who did the True Religion, but this was an earlier Casaubon, who proved that the Hermetic treatises that Ficino had translated and whatever were actually post-Christian and not pre-Christian. Well, before Casaubon proved this in 1614, before that, Hermes Trismegistus was just about to be canonized. They had statues of him in Catholic churches, and while he was considered to be a precursor of Jesus, because Hermetic philosophy was in many ways similar to what Jesus was teaching, without the idea of deifying him. But I mean, So the Catholic Church had embraced the philosophy of Hermes. This meant that you could be fully robed one in one, waving ceremonial magician, and still be a good Christian and get the Church to put an imprimatur on your book up until 1614. So, in 1614, down came the statues of Hermes. They dragged them down, and like Saddam Hussein and Stalin, you know, they pulled the statues down, and then from then on out, in the Roman Catholic world, that part of Christendom, you could not get an imprimatur on a magic book. That's when magic started to go into this, headed toward the Faustian school. Now, I'm mentioning all this for a very, very solid reason, and I know that you're wondering, well, what does this have to do with the knowledge and conversation of the Holy Guardian? It has everything to do with it, and I'll tell you why. Because in medieval times and in the Renaissance up until 1614, the idea was that you use the power of God and the goodness of God and your own pure nature, your own goodness, to control. This gives you the righteous power to control these rebellious and these fallen angels, these so-called demons. This gives you the power to control them, both in your own nature and in a transitive way, you know, in general, and gives you the power to control the elementals, the spirits of nature. And you did this. These magicians thought of themselves like Gandalf, you know, in the white robe, the force of good. But at the same time, they were manipulating and controlling spirits that, you know, might be considered aggressive and evil and rebellious and whatever. This was the way it was done. This was the concept. So, the idea of getting in touch with your own holy guardian angel, and they believed in, you know, and we still do, and whatever, that everybody's born with a holy guardian angel, with a spirit assigned to you, a good spirit assigned to you, and then you can also say that, well, they got a bad one too. So, because naturally, even though we like to be in Kabbalah and in magic, I personally like to be a monist, philosophical monist. But then, on the other hand, we find that it's very necessary to use dualistic philosophy in working with magic, because there's got to be a push me, pull you, and all this thing. And you know, we have a up at the Briatic level, we have a two-stroke engine, and there's good and there's bad and there's white and there's darkness and there's positive, negative, and everything's a binary in the universe anyway. So consequently, we use the good, which is represented by the love force, back to Empedocles, you know, the idea of the love force. That you could, if you want to use a Star Wars analogy, that's the good force. But then there's the dark side. Oh yes, you know, the power of the dark side. Well, there's that too. But really, the good, the love force, that which holds things together, that which is cohesive, that which attracts, that which is positive, that which is light, that force is what you use to control and channel the strife, the destructive, the dark forces, the chaotic forces. Now, this ought to make pretty good sense to everybody. I know that there are a lot of you folks out there listening. Maybe they're in the gothic thing, and maybe even some of you that think you're Satanists. And if you're smart enough, you're listening to me, and you're saying, yeah, but I just goody stuff. Well, I think the more you get into magic, and the more you learn about magic, and the more you learn about the forces of the universe, the more you really ought to consider the balance. And you really ought to consider that just because when you were a kid, you got beaten with a Moses stick or you got beaten with a Jesus stick, that doesn't mean that Moses and Jesus are necessarily bad and that you necessarily have to go making them mad. Not a very good idea to do that. So the idea being that get the good forces on your side. Now, on the idea that we all have, and this is a very, very old idea, that we all are born with, astrologically, a good spirit and a bad spirit, okay? The good spirit looks after you and is your, you can call it your conscience in a way if you want to, but your good spirit is your higher nature. Now, along this line, while we're being philosophical, let's just consider the fact that regardless of whether you want to be religious or not, you should be aware that human beings are social creatures. We really are. We're social creatures, not in a visceral sense like ants and bees, but then on the other hand, we are. We're like ants and bees that also want to do things individually, but we also realize that we have to get along and we have to help each other. And we have to support each other, and we have to cooperate. And whatever competition we engage in has to be fair, and it has to be, and it can't be destructive. It shouldn't be anyway. So that's normal for human beings. So human beings, you know, human beings are basically good. I mean, in the infantry, we have to train kids to kill people. Kids don't want to kill people naturally. We got to train them. We have to literally train them, and still only, I don't know what it is right now with these video games, it's probably a lot higher, but in World War II and even in Vietnam, you know, only about 2 out of every 10 riflemen actually shoots at the enemy. People just don't want to hurt other people that much. Oh, sure, you tackle them on a football field, but you compete in business and all. But people are good, so you really, really want to get your good spirit on your side. And the reason is that the better you are, the more other people are going to get along with you, and the better you'll do in business, the better you'll do in life, the better you'll do in love. The better you'll do in just about anything if you stay on the good side. Don't let people take advantage of you, but you know, be good. Now, I know, as I say, I know that a number of you listening to me, because when I first got into magic, oh, the dark side absolutely fascinated me, and oh, boy, I wanted to, I was very fascinated by the dark side. Yeah, I even called myself Frater or Riemann, you know, when I first got started. But what I began to realize the power of magic and how it really works and all that, I began to realize, wait a minute, this, I gotta stop playing around with this. Sure, the dark side is fascinating, and we do stuff in dim light, and there's a certain spooky aspect to magic, but basically, let's try to be good. So, now, the reason why I've emphasized this is that the idea of the Holy Guardian Angel Retreat is to find your good higher spirit and get in contact with your good higher spirit. And this is not easy for people who are on the path that rejects goodness and rejects God. Now, with us, we're not Christian. We're hermetic, so we don't use YHVH. We use Samaata Anamashaho, but we consider God to be a good positive force. And now, on this Holy Guardian Angel idea, this got started in the Western tradition with a book called Sacred Magic of Amarmel and the Maj. Now, this book was originally written by Abraham von Worms in about 1450, something like that. And it was published in Germany. And the book essentially is, and Abraham von Worms was a Jewish Kabbalist and a magician, and he wrote the book for his son, Lamech. And the idea was to lay out this procedure so that his son could undertake this retreat. And this went on, the original version of this book now, there's four parts to the book, and the retreat was 18 months long. Now, the idea was the first 6 months you prepared, and then you went on into it, but you lived a very chaste life and in seclusion, and you prayed intensely twice a day, and you had an oratory prepared, a little room with an open window out to nature prepared for your horizons, and you did this over and over and over and over and over and over again, praying to get in contact with your Holy Guardian Angel. Finally, when you did, when you finally achieved your contact, your vision, then there was a whole system of magic involving magic squares, by the way, very, very ingenious magic squares, acrostics, which are very much like Kameas, by the way. And you could control just myriads of spirits, many of whom were considered demons. There's Astaroth and Belial, and a lot of demons from that we find in the Galatia were in this catalog of spirits that you could control, because you had sanctified yourself and you had kept this vision going, and you kept this retreat going until you finally had your vision, and then you had the power. And then you had the power to do this. Now, the original book, and by the way, before I forget to mention it, Franz Barden, his spirits, 360 spirits of the Earth Sphere, are taken from the German version of Abraham von Worms' book, the Abermelin book. Now, the way this got into the Golden Dawn tradition in Europe, the French did a copy. They translated the original book by Abraham von Worms into French, and it ended up in the arsenal. And McGregor Mathers was over there in Paris, and he got it out of the arsenal, and he translated it into English. Now, Samuel Mathers did a very good job of translating the French book However, there was a big problem. The French book was a terrible, terrible translation or version of the German original. There were only three books in the French version, whereas there were originally four in the German version. The French version, a lot of the spirits were missing, and worst of all, the magic squares, no, that's not the worst of all, but the magic squares were incomplete. And so even though this book was quite important and all, and it really generated a lot of importance, it was not really as anywhere near as usable as the original book. However, there's one big, huge mistake in the French book that is not in the original German. And I can't figure out why. Maybe my friend Maestro Duquette can tell me why he didn't mention this in his foreword to the German edition. In the French edition, the magician, when he's in this retreat, is supposed to get a child and use the child for his envisioning. Now, sure, he's supposed to do the prayers and all that, but the child is the one that's going to have the vision. Now, there's nothing about this in the German version. The German version, the magician himself finally has the vision, which is the way it should be. Why the French, who knows why they did this? I don't know, but this is totally wrong. And you should never, never, when you're in magical training, don't ever depend upon someone else to have your visions for you. I know a number of people did it. I mean, Cagliostro even did it. I mean, there's a number of old magicians. D, of course, Enochian would probably be somewhat different if D had trained himself rather than depend on Kelly. In magic, you have to develop yourself. So the German version, which is now available on the original book, this is the one that you really ought to use. Now, where did we get ours? Where did we get ours from? Okay. This book's just recently been reissued, so you can get it pretty easily if you want to. It's called The Complete Magic Curriculum of the Secret Order, GBG, by Lewis T. Culling. Now, it was originally published by Llewellyn in 1969, and old Louis Culling was our senior advisor when we got started, when we started the OTA in 1970. Louis Culling was living in a little cottage down in Silver Lake, and he was kind of retired, and he was getting close to 80. And we got a hold of him because I got the complete magical curriculum here, and I'm still looking at the original book. And we got a hold of Louis, and of course Louis knew Rigardi and whatever. So Louis wanted to be our senior advisor. Well, now at that time, I thought I was a Thelemite at that time, and when we got the OTA started, we thought we were Thelemites. Now, actually, we thought we were Thelemites. There was only one chapter, just the first chapter of the Book of the Law is the only one that's in this book, and believe it or not, the Book of the Law was kind of hard to come by in those days, the whole book. So I read the first chapter of the Book of the Law. I thought, that's okay. I don't mind, there's nothing wrong with that. So we thought we were Thelemic, and we got started. And the GBG, Anna Lou, had an influence on us. And now, one of the things that Charles Russell, who, by the way, was quite a genius, Charles Russell was a terrific mathematician and a linguist. He finally is retired in his 90s, either his 80s and 90s. He's passed away now, of course. He was translating books into Mandarin Chinese down in an apartment in Santa Monica before he died. But Charles Russell was the master of the magical cube. And if you could ever find it, there was a Charlie Russell website. in which he had all these marvelous magical cubes with all sorts of, he's like Rubik cubes, except they were all covered with magical symbols, and they were just marvelous. And so Russell was kind of the unknown genius of magic. Now, he started this Great Brotherhood of God, or Gnostic Brotherhood of God, either way you want to say it. And this was kind of popular back in Southern California back before World War II. And one of the things that we really picked up from the GBG was their 3-day Holy Guardian Angel retreat. And I'll just read you a little bit here on the instructions. Instructions for the magical retirement. This is from the GBG book. You must first learn this ritual by memory so that you can speak the words and perform the gestures freely without hesitation of memory. The retirement is for 3 days and 3 nights in a location where there are no distractions. You can drink water, but eat no food. If deemed necessary for your well-being, you may take nourishment in liquid form only. That's the juice fast idea. Now, the ritual and your written record in your blank book marked Book MN is to be performed 8 times daily at 1 or 1.5 hour intervals. You may arrange this schedule in 2 parts so that you may have a siesta period. Do not neglect to write your record of impressions after each ritual. Now, then they went ahead with the ritual, and it's kind of like their pentagram, of course, is more like a star ruby and various aspects of the ritual. But anyway, when we took it over, and we took over this 3-day retreat idea, we came up with what I think is it's less thalamic, it's more generic. We got the idea that in 3 days you could do 22 rituals. You could do one ritual for each path on the tree of life, each major trump, and you could go all the way up. And then after each ritual, you would do just like the GBG. You would write it. You would write down in your diary. You write down your impressions of each ritual, and you keep going and get a little bit of, you know, just a little bit of rest in between. And then you'd go in Friday evening, and we insisted that you clean yourself out completely. In other words, two days without any food, and then you go on in there and you get your juice. Not even a pulpy juice either. It's got to be pretty clear juice. And you go in there for Friday evening, and you come out Sunday afternoon. Now, we realize that everybody's not going to make their contact on the same path somewhere, you know, you're going to, and that is significant, that what path and where on the tree of life you actually do make your major contact. But after you've made your contact, you keep going. You don't say, oh, well, I made my contact, now I'm going to quit. No, you keep going. You go all the way up to the top of the tree, do them all. And you find that once you made your contact, then you will continue, you know, and to get your inspirations. And so that was our structure. It still is our structure. And the first time I tried to do this, the first attempt I made was 1972. And I went in there, and I made a huge mistake, and I want to underline this. I went into the temple, fasted, and I did all that, and I don't have any tarot cards, and I get my tree of life, and I'm in there, and my altar, and all business, and my porta potty, and everything I needed, and I took with me a copy of Bulwer Lytton's Zanoni to read in between rituals. This was incredibly stupid because I got the mind is perverse in this respect. I got so interested in Zanoni that was taking my, that Zanoni was taking more of my imagination and my focus than doing the rituals. I was just doing the rituals and then get back to Zanoni. Well, the result was I really didn't get a good contact. I finished it, but I mean, I didn't get a really good contact. So I realized that the mind is going to jump on something, especially if you give the mind something to attract it when you're trying to keep it focused on something. So therefore, based upon that bad experience that I had, I laid down some rules for the retreat, which still stand. You don't take anything in there to occupy yourself that does not directly relate to the ritual itself. So, take Rigardi's Garden of Pomegranates. That's a short outline. And if you want to take Paul Case's Book of Tokens, that's on the tarot because the tarot relates to the paths. Then that. But that's not going to get you off focus because you could pick the tarot card and the path both from both those books that can relate to exactly where you're at when you're going up the tree. Now, the same thing should apply to yoga because you're going to be using Hermetic Yoga. Do not, when you use your Hermetic Yoga, do not go into the spheres and talk to the pagan god forms. You don't do that because those pagan god forms are Yetziric, and they represent forces of nature and attitudes in your psyche, and you're trying to get to something. I mean, I don't mean to say anything higher than the pagan, but it is really. I mean, you're trying to get to a higher spirit that is your link to God. And so, therefore, you use your yoga, definitely, but do not get involved in your pagan god forms because you're not trying to reach a pagan god or a pagan goddess. That's not what you're trying to do. Now, I know some of the somebody going to say, they want to talk to Horus. No, Horus is not your holy guardian angel. And neither is Astarte, and neither is Baal, and they're not. They're wonderful. I love them, but that's not what you're going for. You're going for that link to the supernal. You're going for an experience that is briatic. You're really not going for Yetziric experience. You want to access Bria and Absolute. You're not. And I know that some people will say, well, the whole thing is in Malkuth. Well, if you want to look at it that way, but let's try for Bria and Atzaluth and Malkuth if you want to split Kabbalistic hairs. Now, you know, the second time I did my retreat, because I wasn't going to give up on it, I wasn't satisfied with the first time. The second time I did my retreat, at that time I was very much into Enochian. Now, I debated whether or not to mention this in this program, but I did, you know, I will because it's the truth. I was very much into Enochian. So I did, along with my Hermetic Yoga, I opened my watchtowers each time. Each time I opened my watchtower. And also I used, and we now have made this a requirement, in the Bible, there is a psalm, right offhand, I don't have my Bible right next to me. I think it's 119. I think it's 119. But there is a set of a whole bunch of 22 different little psalms, one for each letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Well, of course, the Hebrew alphabet is also the Phoenician alphabet. So you can use these psalms for each path, and you should. So use that. You use the psalms along with your yoga and along with your particular holy guardian angel ritual which you develop. And what I did though is I did an opening by watchtowers. So when I finally got in contact with my holy guardian angel, who by the way did not have an Enochian name necessarily, and I'll get into that The way you find out the name of your Holy Guardian Angel, now, you should do this before you go into your retreat. Martin, in Initiation into Hermetics, tells you to use a Chevrolet pendulum and get in contact with your Holy Guardian Angel using a Chevrolet pendulum. Well, I don't often disagree with Franz, but I do disagree with him in this respect. Chevrolet pendulum is a wonderful tool, and we very much recommend it. You should use it. However, the Chevrolet pendulum gets you in direct contact with your subconscious, and your subconscious is not necessarily your higher self. That's not, it really isn't. Your subconscious is kind of like a selfish little child, and is really not your higher self. And so consequently, the subconscious will give you accurate answers, but your Holy Guardian Angel, you want to do something a little more profound than the Chevrolet pendulum for getting in contact. However, what you can do with the Chevrolet pendulum is that you can get the name of your Holy Guardian Angel, get it to spell it out. Remember now with the Chevrolet pendulum, don't ever ask it any more than 20 questions. After 20 questions, it goes wonky. So use that to determine the name. Now, along with that, there's a book in the Galatia, the Lamegaton. The Galatia is a book in the Lamegaton. There is one of the books in the Lamegaton called The Pauline Art. And one of the major things in the Pauline Art is a great big chart of Holy Guardian Angels. Well, yeah, and it's very well worked out, and you can do this. You can find, it's not too hard to calculate, and you can find your Holy Guardian Angel's name on this chart in the Pauline Art. Well, I did that, and I came up with a name, and I got it. And, I thought that sounded pretty nice, but then there was something I was wondering about. I thought, wait a minute here, and I decided to go to Davidson, and of course every magician should have a copy of Gustav Davidson's Dictionary of Angels and Fallen Angels, and so I went to Davidson, and sure enough, I looked up my Holy Guardian Angel, and he did not have a good reputation. Whoa. So I said, I'm not going to do this. Well, at the time, Dave Kennedy was in a very bad mood, and I told him about it. And I said, Dave, my Holy Guardian Angel, according to the Pauline Art, turns out to be not so nice. And Dave said, do it anyway. And I said, no, I'm not. So I went, and I used the Chevrolet pendulum, and I used the ring and disc, the Golden Dawn ring and disc method. And I came up with the name of my Holy Guardian Angel. Now, that's something you should do before you go into this retreat. Get the name, because that's what you... And then make a sigil of the Holy Guardian Angel. Make a sigil. Use the rose. If you use the Golden Dawn rose sigil maker, you do it that way. An OTA rose, you can do it that way. But make yourself a sigil and have your name already ready so we can go in there and get it. Now, when I did my mine Holy Guardian Angel retreat that I in 74, the one that really worked, the one this was one of the greatest experiences of my magical life, and I just can't tell you how I go over every so often. I read my journal over again. Every couple of years I go back and I read it over again, because for one thing, my Holy Guardian Angel predicted exactly what was going to happen in my life. I mean, it was uncanny. And then because I had done it in Enochian, because I'd opened my watchtowers each time, and I don't recommend you do this unless you're really into Enochian. When I got my vision, I ended up with what my HGA said were the 10 laws of Atlantis. And they were based on the Tree of Life, because the Tree of Life has 10 spheres. And these were thou shalts instead of thou shalt nots. And they were beautiful. I mean, going down the tree, and they were just all these beautiful qualities that were all positive. Now, if you want to find out what these qualities, rather than what these 10 laws are like, you gotta buy a copy of Beyond Lemuria, and inside the copy we have a booklet, and inside the booklet we have all 10 laws of Atlantis. In the film itself, we only did about 4 of them because we didn't want to, you know, we didn't want to stay on that too long. So we did about 4 of them. I remember that Ed, you know, he was playing Reverend Rich, the fundamentalist preacher, and after Merrick does this beautiful job of doing the 10 laws, and Reverend Rich says, "Is this a way to avoid the 10 commandments?" And Philo says, "No, but wouldn't it be so much easier to obey those 10 thou shalt nots if you first practice these 10 thou shalts?" And then Rich says, "Oh, we're all sinners, we need rules." And then Philo says, "Yes, but the qualities of mercy and compassion arise from within. They can't be imposed from without." So the 10 laws are, in spite of the apocalyptic and savage nature of Enochian, because it is apocalyptic, very much influenced by the Book of Revelations, and in some cases ruthless and whatever, in spite of that, because I really was focusing on the good, I got those 10 laws that were just those, just really, really beautiful. And so that was the vision that I achieved. But along with that, I look back on my life. I have my life rolling up, and I grieve for things I hadn't been able to grieve about before. I came out of that retreat feeling like a transformed person, and I can't tell you just how wonderful an experience it was, and. And so I think that this is a terrific experience, and it's something that every magician who really is, you know, serious about becoming a real magician should certainly consider doing in one way or another. Although it is, as I said in the abstract, this is a very serious and somewhat trying and demanding procedure, and you better be in good health, and you certainly better be in have your head on your shoulders, and you can't be subject to any mental condition with you. You got to be in good shape, and the way we do it, I insist on staying right nearby. And of course, our temple, we have a little one of these little people kind of things that you can open up with a little brass door, you know, so you can continually check, and the person doing the retreat is sticking notes that they need some. I need more charcoal, or, oh, and by the way, yeah, you got to make up a bunch of Avermelon incense. You really got to make a bunch of that. You got to have plenty of charcoal and plenty of candles. And that's another thing, too. It's a fire danger because you're in an altered state, and unless you're really careful, you could set the temple on fire. And so that's something that I've got to be nearby. I like to be close enough to where I can hear you doing the rituals. And if a couple hours go by and I don't hear anything, I'm going to check on you. I'll knock on the door or something or other. Make sure that you're doing it. Now, everybody that does this oversleeps at least once, because you know you got to have that deep sleep. You got to have 2 hours of that deep sleep. So everybody tends to oversleep at least once. But then you should keep these rituals going. You should keep them going about every hour and a half. You ought to be doing one. So your mentor, your know, your concierge, whoever's monitoring your retreat, is going to be listening for those. They're going to be listening for you doing that pentagram ritual, getting started doing it. And so this has got to be a supervised. I think it should be a supervised activity. Anybody want to call in on this or make any comments on it? Our guest caller number is 347-857-1830. So those of you who have done the retreat, you want to come in, you make your comments on it. Those of you who are thinking about doing it, or, you know, if you got any thoughts on this. But I do want to emphasize, while we're on the subject, that you can do this. You can do this retreat, and do it wrong. If you go in there and try to reach some spirit that is not really good or not really a higher spirit, yeah, you can reach it, because we all, you know, if you want to take this dualistic approach, and I think it's fair for, in magical psychology, we kind of need the dualistic approach. You've got a dark side and you've got a light side, and you don't want to contact that dark side doing this. That's not the object of this. So this is a problem for, I won't mention whatever magical philosophy is just a problem for, but it can be. You really, in order to get the best out of this, in order to make this work for you, you should be trying to get in touch with your higher angel. One of the things that I mentioned up here earlier is that Cagliostro had a 41-day version of this. And he actually suggested in his Egyptian ritual book, that you build a little tower out of wood. And he had a description of it. And that you go in there for 41 days and that'd be terrific, I suppose, for 41 days. But who are you going to get to support you for 41 days? You're going to have to hire some people to come in and bring you juice and take care of you and whatever. So that's a little impractical. But the 3-day retreat is workable for people who have jobs, people who have responsibilities. You can usually figure out how to get free, so you can drive from work and get to the temple at 6 o'clock in the evening, make your preparations, go on in there, and come on out Sunday afternoon, and that you can do. And yet, intense as it is, it's a wonderful experience. I do think that you should be. I think, and most everybody recommends that you be. You do this in your 30s, 40s, and 50s. You can still do it in later life, if you choose. But it's better to do it when you're younger, and try as hard as you can, like I said, to get yourself all cleaned out and get yourself, purify yourself as much as possible before you do it. And also, I should mention that the operative device that you use when you're doing this retreat is a crystal ball. Remember now, don't do this with a dark mirror. You do this with a crystal ball, because a crystal ball is a vessel of light, and angels are creatures of light. So the crystal ball on the horned altar, the incense altar that you've all seen in our videos, and this is how to do it. And your stool, and you sit down looking up at the crystal and doing your ritual. And remember, you don't take anything in there to read or anything in there to concentrate on that doesn't directly relate to the ritual you are doing. And you also, you need an alarm clock. You need plenty of, a wind-up alarm clock is best, actually. And Soror Shashad just mentioned when I was discussing this with her the other night, she said, yeah, it should be a wind-up clock so you can subconsciously hear it ticking. And that's a good idea. And you need, of course, naturally, you need a mattress pad and a sleeping bag and you know, so you can catch just a little bit of rest between rituals. What we're doing here is forcing. This is, in a way, almost a sensory deprivation kind of a, this is kind of your in a sense, I know it's a negative term, but you're kind of brainwashing yourself here. You know, you're doing this, and this is one of the reasons why I say this has got to be straight traditional. We're not trying to impose OTA dogma on you or Canaanite gods on you or anything like that. This is straight traditional. Tree of Life, the regular Hermetic tarot cards, the paths, and that's it. Not even the 11 sphere tree. We don't even do it that way. You do it straight tradition because this is your guardian angel that you're going after. This is not something that the OTA, this is not the OTA's guardian angel. This is your guardian angel. And so therefore, we want to keep it as close to the general tradition. In other words, the general tradition, the general Western established tradition. And I know you can say, well, in the Orthodox Kabbalah, there are no tarot cards. Well, no, the Orthodox Hermetic tradition, okay? So this is what we do, and this is how to do it. And I can't emphasize enough how important this is and what a beautiful experience it is. And how many of us, and there are people in the OTA who have come back and done it again. They like it so much they do it again. And it's almost everyone who's done this has had a profound experience. I can't emphasize enough how important it is. Now, Next week we're going to go off to Mount Shasta. We're going to talk about a kind of a different sort of vision. We're going to go up to California's Holy Mountain and we're going to describe the whole tradition up there and the place itself and how to do Mount Shasta visions and retreats and all of that. And we'll base this, of course, on an article that I had in Atlantis Rising last year, in which we described this whole business. And so we'll give you the article for reference, and we'll go up to the Holy Mountain, and we will see if we can't. And so we'll see you next week, and meanwhile, good magic.